Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about reasonable expectations. And we have them, right? We have all kinds of expectations when we go into a negotiation, the primary one being that we will succeed in creating a successful outcome. But we have reasonable expectations. And I think the first thing we should decide, because we're practical people and we want to know this, the first thing we should decide is what is reasonable, right? Because we use that word kind of, well, without defining it. What's a reasonable expectation, right? Yeah, what's reasonable? I think this one is a very good comment. Thank you all for being here. We have lots of participation. I think quite a few people are saying that reasonable is something that is capable of being done. Yeah, we can do it. Reasonable is something that is capable of being done. I like this one, too. A lot of folk are trying to determine how we know what's reasonable. How do we know what's capable of being done? And so maybe it's open for discussion. Let's think about it together, right? Or with our group. Oh, it's open for discussion. Mm-hmm. This is a good point, too. What is reasonable may be different for an individual than it is for the group. Yeah, we might have a group standard and an individual standard. What is reasonable, depending on which side we're on, right? Leader, participant, team, whole group, individual, right? Reasonable expectations might change. They might not always be the same, right? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that first. Then we'll decide what is reasonable. And then let's decide what is reasonable expectations for us as leaders. And who is reasonably expecting them? Well, our participants, mainly. And also our, I'm going to call him or her our employer, whoever it is that brought us in. They may or may not be actually paying the fee, but they're the person we report to, right? The organization we report to. And they have expectations about us as leaders. Uh-huh. What kind of expectations? A lot of folks are talking about the process, that we'll be efficient in the process. We'll be good at it, right? Yeah. I'm going to go for this too. People are talking about self-control. I'm good that as leaders we will be calm, right? I'm going to call that as leaders, there's a reasonable expectation that we will model the civility rules, right? A reasonable expectation that we will do that we will remain civil. Mm-hmm. How about a reasonable expectation of impartiality? Good point. We are the impartial third party that's been brought in to get this together, to get it all settled out, to reach our successful outcome. Well, let's work at that, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a real reasonable expectation that we will be impartial, that we will be able to deal with all sides. Mm-hmm. This is a good expectation, too. It's kind of a process expectation, but it's a little bit different. A reasonable expectation that the leader will keep the group moving forward towards their successful outcome. And not just kind of chasing their tail. You ever see a group that does that? They kind of can't decide anything. And so they can't get to the next part. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, there is a reasonable expectation that the leader will have empathy and listen with an open mind. And we're going to talk about that. Now, there's another group that we have a reasonable expectation for, and that's the participants, right? They have a reasonable expectation about us as leaders, but we have a reasonable expectation about them as participants too, right? They're all in this together. So what's our reasonable expectation of our participants? Yes, this is a good one. We have a reasonable expectation that they will act in good faith, right? Yeah, that they're in good faith. Yes, a reasonable expectation that if they've been given a task, right, they will complete it in a timely manner and to the best of their abilities, right? Yeah. How about a reasonable expectation of our participants that they will work as a team, that they will work with the other people, work as a team? Yes, they also need empathy to reach the same desired outcome, even if they're there for different reasons. And that happens. Sometimes our participants are from all kinds of different perspectives, all kinds of different areas. But when it comes down to it, everybody in the room, so to speak, it might be Skype, but everybody participating wants the same outcome, just for different reasons. Yeah. But that means that they need to also have empathy with each other and to work as a team, right? Right. So let's talk about what is reasonable. Yeah, let's find out. Our first topic under what is reasonable is capable of being done, right? How do we know it's capable of being done? Muhammad and others says that they have the experience of it being done before, right? We've seen it done, which is how we know it's capable of being done. Now, it probably wasn't exactly the same situation or exactly the same people, but we can generalize, and we've seen a successful outcome. We've seen it done. That's how we know that it's a reasonable expectation, right? We've done it. People are talking about the fact that not only have we done it, because we might not have personally done it, but that other groups have succeeded. Yeah, we've seen it done, even though we haven't done it personally. It's a good moment to think about if we really can't figure out how to move forward and what is and the reasonable expectation is capable of being done and we don't think it's reasonable. It's a good moment to maybe connect with the other group that has succeeded, that has done it, and ask how. Ask what they advise. Yeah, make them experts, right? Connect with them. A lot of times, especially on something that is dear to our hearts, like a social issue or something, people are very forthcoming. They'll actually tell you how it worked and how they got to the point where they knew that they could handle it and what it took to get it done, which is really what we want to know, right? Yes, exactly. Eliza and others are saying that you've got similar circumstances, expectations. Yeah, it's never exactly the same because we're dealing with humans. And different humans have different needs, different ideas. But it's a similar circumstance, and they made it. And we're really just as smart as they are. So, hey, let's work our way towards an expectation that we can do it too. How about putting it open for discussion, what's reasonable? It kind of depends on the group, right? A lot of times, the group wants to decide what is reasonable. Yeah. And people are voting for letting them, right? It's a good point. Thomas and others are saying you need to decide the expectations for the group as a whole and for the teams. Decide expectations of what is reasonable for the group as a whole and for the teams. Because it might be a different standard, really. Because the group as a whole is going to be educated by the teams, right? Yeah. And what's reasonable might indeed be open for discussion. You'll get better, if it is not clear, you'll get better buy-in. The participants will feel that they've really decided it and therefore need to go forward if you discuss it as a group and decide what is reasonable and what is to be expected, right? Instead of just telling them. Now, having said that, some groups really want the leader to just tell them, and they will go from there. They want to be instructed. They want to be kind of seriously led. Does that make sense to all of you? Yeah. It might be a cultural bent. Some societies, some cultures are a little bit more used to a very authoritarian leader, right? People are saying it's faster. Yes, in the sense that you tell people what to do and we move on. You'll get more cooperation, maybe, if you make it up to them. Does that make sense? Sometimes. Sometimes it's a corporate culture. The leader, which is us, is brought in to fix it, darn it, and not to have a bunch of democracy happen, a bunch of discussion. So you have to decide that, because your leadership style will change with the cultural needs. And if you can't really modify your leadership style, you are what you are, maybe you should recognize that and kind of suggest maybe someone else is better for this particular task. You don't have to take everything that is offered to you. And you'll enhance your reputation if you know what it is that you can really win. Does that make sense? Yeah. And so you decide what the reasonable expectation is and how we're going to decide that. And if how that happens is really not your leadership style, perhaps you have to think about that. And you might bring in, you might bring in an expert, or you might recuse yourself. You might say, I don't think I'm the right person for this, right? Sometimes the leadership style, Elizabeth and others are saying, sometimes the leadership style is different for each individual and then for the whole. Maybe. You would need to really have an opportunity to really meet with the individual who's kind of a holdout. It depends. If the whole group needs you to do something, like just tell them what to do, well, that's part of leadership, to know that, to really decide that, to really say, you know, this is really what we're going to do. Everybody follow. We're fine. We're on the same page. We're marching forward. Yes. If you've got one individual who kind of can't one way or the other, maybe a little bit of a private discussion with them would help, right? And you can show them how it's important to work as a team and to go forward, and that they're not helping the cause by not going forward with the reasonable expectations that we've all decided on, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a good point. We're going to talk about it in a minute as a participant requirement, a reasonable expectation, but it's a good point to make here too. And you know, this show is unscripted. It goes where it takes us. And so now we're into this. A lot of people are asking what to do if you really do have a holdout who's kind of gumming up the works and they're being stubborn. Well, the first thing you have to know is how come they're being stubborn, right? Are they acting in bad faith? Because we're about to talk about good faith in our participants as a reasonable expectation. Maybe they're trying to keep us from reaching our successful outcome, right? They've got a hidden agenda. Maybe we should find out, right? But sometimes there's people in this world who are just ornery. They're just opposite. It's not really that they're trying to gum up the work so much. They just don't like to agree on anything, right? Yeah, they like to be the holdout. People are using the word cantankerous. And it applies for men and women and younger people and like that too. There's some people who just like to fight. They don't want to reach an agreement, or for some reason they'd like to prolong the process. I see this sometimes when people get to get paid their regular salary, but they get to kind of take time off from their regular work to do these groups, to do this negotiation. And it's kind of fun, and they hate to see it end. And they're not that fond of their real job, and this one's better, right? So they try to prolong it as long as possible. Yeah, you know, it's convivial. There are treats. And if they, for example, if they go to an evening negotiation, which is kind of fun, right, they get a day off, for example, from their job. Or they don't have to show up at their job until noon. You see, there's perks, and they don't want to see them go away. You have to know that too, right? You have to understand that and have empathy for it, have understanding. Remember that understanding, empathy, is not agreement. It is understanding. See, it's kind of an agenda, and you might have several people that kind of have noticed that it's kind of fun to negotiate and show up and refuse to do stuff so that, well, yeah, there are people that like that. Mm-hmm. So the main thing you have to know is ahead of time. And, yeah, we've talked about this before in prior shows. They're archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. But before you sign on as leader, you should get straight, in fact, hopefully in writing with an actual contract, what you can do about that. How much power do you have? Who's going to back you up? What can you influence? Can you influence their employment, right? Usually. What's the penalty for noncompliance? There should be one. And it should be in your power so that everybody understands it. I actually get this all straight beforehand, right? Because my specialty, if I have one, because, you know, you do get called back for the same kinds of issues, is my specialty is kind of coming in when a group has failed, right? And they reached animosity. They couldn't get a successful outcome. They couldn't compromise. They couldn't reach a accord and go on to a successful outcome. And I come in as the new sheriff in town because they must, right? And they've got to play by the rules, my rules, kind of, yeah. And I need to know, and they might not think of a successful outcome as so big a carrot, you know, the carrot and stick, but it doesn't influence them personally, maybe. And maybe they perceive that if things change, maybe they won't have as much power, which is a big deal for people, right? And it's something that needs to be addressed, right? Yeah. And what happens is that to know what you can do about it. And I get that very straight ahead of time and in writing. What's my power? Who can I call in? What's the penalty for noncompliance, right? Usually I do corporate, so usually it has something to do with people's jobs, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So that's an expectation of reasonableness that can be enforced. Yeah. And you can't have a bully who takes over the entire group and kind of hijacks it. Probably that's what happened the last time, which is why I've been brought in, because they couldn't get over it. Mm-mm-mm. So you have an expectation of reasonableness, and we're going to get to what we expect of our participants, but we have reasonable expectations for them too. Yeah. Let's talk about, because we're kind of going in order, the expectation of the participants about us as leaders. What do our participants expect as a reasonable expectation? Mm-hmm. We talked about efficiency as our first one. So what are we going to do as efficiency to fulfill the reasonable expectation of our participants? Yeah, a lot of people are talking about tracking progress, and people asking about an intern versus a paid person. Nothing wrong with interns. They're fabulous. We use them at Recipe for Peace now. I like adults, people that are in an MBA program, Master of Business Administration, for example, kind of adults that have seen some, well, some adult stuff, have actually had employment and like that. Nothing wrong with interns. They're fabulous. I think if you're going to use them for anything a little bit more complex, you should make a deal with wherever it is the interns are coming from, usually a college, that they get to stay for a while, right? And not just one quarter, because it takes a little while to get them up to speed and a little while to kind of look at them and watch them and make sure that they're up to speed. Yeah. And so it's important to really be able to get some training and then be able to use them. Because if you train them and then they leave, you haven't had any benefit, right? Yeah. So you want to track progress. You can use an intern. I vote for paid person so that they really can track. They're really there all the time. Mm-hmm. What's an expectation of participants on us as leaders? I'm going to say that to know what we're doing really is under efficiency, right? And to not lie about your skills. I see people do puffery sometimes. No. People are going to know. You can't just, that has to do with your reputation, really. And you can't lie about what you know what to do, because it's going to be obvious that you don't know what to do. And so you want to be efficient. You want to trot out your skills. But you also don't want to enhance your skills by, I guess lying is a big word, but by saying stuff that's not exactly true. Oops. Mm-hmm. People are talking about transparency in the process and the fact that I actually announce things. I do. I like to, when we first start together, first of all, if I'm coming in at something that has failed and the old leader is still there, which they usually are, I like to announce that there's a new sheriff in town, that things are going to be handled somewhat differently, and we're going to reach our successful outcome, right? Yeah. And I tell them all kinds of things, and switch transparency in the process, right? Yeah, so that you know stuff right up front. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I tell them that's an expectation of them on us as leaders is the civility rules, which is our next topic, right? The civility rules at their base, at the core, say we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other. It seems obvious, but it's not. Because there's always someone in the group who really wants to be indignant. Yeah, wants to be impossible in some way. No. We're going to have the civility rules, which say that we will not be rude to one another at their very core. We're going to let everybody take a turn speaking, for example. And during that turn, we will not roll our eyes, sigh, text to the person across the room something dirty so that they laugh, that kind of stuff, right? Right. In order to enforce the civility rules, which, by the way, you must do immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately is terribly important. You cannot let the group go uncivil, as in ignore stuff. And then, when things have gone kind of bad, suddenly announce we're going to enforce the civility rules. No, we're going to do it right away, so that everybody knows they can't get away with it, right? Whatever kind of rudeness they're contemplating or doing, we're going to enforce the civility rules immediately, consistently. We're not going to get tired and not enforce them anymore until things go bad, right? Immediately, consistently, and fairly, right? No bias. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. Very, very important. So, we've got the civility rules. We announced them at the beginning of when we started this group, so that no one's surprised, right? Now, we're going to model them. Yeah, we're going to be the ultimate act of civility. You cannot get people to not to do something that you don't model. You just can't. It's not reasonable, right? It's not a reasonable expectation to insist that your participants act in a civil manner when you, as leader, do not. Unreasonable. It's an unreasonable expectation. You've got to show what the civility rules are in order for people to understand them and do it, right? You must always be the model of civility rules. I don't care how hard it is. Hey, we're asking our participants to follow the civility rules. We must follow them as leader, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our next expectation of the participants about us as leaders is impartiality, right? We're impartial third party. We do not give an opinion unless it's asked for, right? Yeah, Zoe Nother says it's inappropriate to interject an opinion unless it's called for. We're supposed to be for no side in particular and for every side, because what we're, our job, our function, is to get everybody towards the middle with consent to compromise, so that we can reach consensus and move on, right? It's usually not our business to interject our opinion, even though we probably have one, being human beings, right? Right. Goes to the model of civility rules. Now, sometimes people ask your opinion. In fact, kind of frequently as you get more experience. What do you think we should do? We've reached a crossroads. We can't. We're having trouble deciding. You have experience, leader, with this type of issue. What do you recommend? Well, that's different. You can voice a recommendation if specifically asked for. Generally speaking, though, it's not our job to interject an opinion. It's our job to get everybody towards the middle and reach consensus. Mm-hmm. This is a good point that's being made. Lee and others say that different groups and issues require different levels of leader assistance. Different groups and issues require different levels of leader assistance. This is true. Sometimes you have a group, especially one that I often see type of, where they've already kind of failed, and you can see as new leader what happened. You can see the group dynamic is having a problem. And you need to fix it, right? So that we can, which is our next topic, move forward. We need to move forward. They've gotten stuck. They've reached an impasse, right? And what they really need is leader assistance in getting over that impasse. Because if they can't reach the impasse, gosh darn it, they're really not going to be able to move forward, and we need to move forward, right? Right. So they need to be helped by the leader, sometimes more subtly than others, right? But you can point out as impartial third party that this is what's happened with the group dynamic before, and we're not going to repeat the pattern. Right? Yeah, you're not going to repeat the same mistake. We're going to go forward in a new direction. We're going to go forward to the next step. Yes. Hussein and others say you need to prompt them to get to the next step. Yeah. They need to be gotten over the hump, right? They need to be prompted to get to the next step because they don't understand what the next step is, right? And that is a leadership skill to help people understand where it is we're going next, right? Yeah. What it is we're going to do, where it is we're going next, what it is that we need to be assisted with so that we can move on to the next step, right? Mm-hmm. This is an interesting way of putting it, but it's really a good point. Suki and others say that you need to prevent discussion backslide, right? You need to prevent discussion backslide. Sometimes you've got very passionate people, and the group has made a decision, and it looks like they're going to move forward. But somebody can't let it go. Their prior opinion, they keep interjecting, maybe a couple of people. They can't move forward. They've got to keep arguing a certain point that we've all decided is not practical at this time, for example. But they keep interjecting it. They keep arguing it. They keep going forward with just that one because it's the one that really, really got their attention that they can really see. And we've decided to move forward in a slightly different way, usually not extremely different, but we need to go on. And they cannot keep bringing it back in, right? Yeah. And they're having trouble moving on. And they're stymieing the group. What should we do? Well, yeah, we've got votes for throw them out of the group. Point. You could throw them out of the group. That's an interesting idea. But what if they're kind of important to the group and they can't be thrown out? Usually people that are insisting on that know that they have a unique voice in the group. And that you can't just ditch them, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So we need to move forward, but they're having trouble moving with us. Mm-hmm. How about a private talk, right? Yeah, it doesn't have to be in front of everybody. That's why we have the food also, so that the leader can maybe have a little private talk with someone to help them see. To help them see that what we're moving on to is advantageous for everybody, and we haven't ditched their idea, we've just modified it, right? Yeah, you don't want to say to somebody, well, you're completely wrong. We're going to move in this direction. No, what they wanted helped us to move in this direction, and it's the next logical step, right? Yeah, you don't need to insult anyone, for heaven's sakes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a different leader assistance, a different level of confidence, of real expertise, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. To really move forward to the next step and not backslide, to go keep going back. And for this, we are going to need to have a reasonable expectation from our participants of us that we will have empathy and an open mind. Yeah, we will have an open mind and empathy. Remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Understanding, not necessarily agreement, right? Yeah. And in order, thank you. Whole bunch of you are bringing this up. Thank you. It means you've been listening. I'm so delighted. Yay. In order to get the empathy, we're going to have to break out the 5W questions, right? Who, what, where, when, and why? Who, what, where, when, and why? The 5W questions so that we can get understanding, so we can know something. So that we know how come somebody is insisting on this And maybe if we find out the 5W questions, who, what, where, when, and why, maybe we can gain some understanding on how to have compromise and go forward, right? What it is, how come you've got that deep-seated opinion, right? Mm-hmm. Who told you that? What did they say? Where did you hear it? When? Why do you think that, right? You don't actually have to ask them all in that order, or maybe not even ask all of them at all, because you want to elicit information so that you can understand why somebody is taking this side, why somebody is really insisting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, it is very different between something that you learn and something that you have personally experienced. Yes. People are asking which one is stronger. I think the answer is it depends. I don't know which one is stronger because I don't know the circumstances, right? It depends. Sometimes something that you have learned, like as a child, right, has taken on in your mind, in the mind of your participant, the properties of fact. Mm-hmm. They think it's a fact. They don't think it's an opinion. It's not a learned thing. It's a plain, ordinary fact. That's kind of, you're going to have to dispute that, maybe, right? One that is from experience, I often think is stronger in a way, but it has to do, but if it's from experience, people can understand that they're not having the exact same experience, right? They are dealing with different people. Yeah, not the exact same experience. That makes a difference. Different people, different issues, different way of handling it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get down to the how come with our 5W questions. And then we're going to have empathy, which is understanding, not agreement. And our other group members are going to have empathy for each other too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we're going to, well, kind of require it. Yeah. So you need to deal with an open mind. Now, those are the reasonable expectations of our participants, our employer, on us as leaders. But there's another set of reasonable expectations, right? And that's a reasonable expectation of us, the leader, about our participants. Yeah, we have reasonable expectations about our group, about the group dynamic, about the individuals who are, well, being led by us, right? That's our participants. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the first one a little bit already, that there's a reasonable expectation of our participants that they will act in good faith. Yeah, they'll act in good faith. They're going to act for the good of everyone, as well as they see it, and they will not kind of go off on a tangent and leave us without a viable participant. That's a good faith. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true too. Sometimes you see this depending on how really deep the issues are. Mm-hmm. People are talking about good faith is not being a spy position. Ooh, being a double agent, right? Yeah. And that's one of the things we find out with the 5W questions and also with our participants' actions and attitude and whether or not you can see that they're trying to derail it. Mm-hmm. Because they're from the other side, right? Hmm. Yes. So good faith means that you want to have somebody who's not a spy for the opposition. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sometimes you see that corporate. Sometimes you see it for kind of social groups, not groups, but people who are trying to create a social change, societal change. You have a reasonable expectation of the participants. The George and others are talking about you act within the team to the best of your ability. You've been placed on a team. You've joined it. Let's do it to the very best of our ability. Yeah, whatever that is. We're going to act to the best of our ability. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Barbara and others are saying that you have a reasonable expectation of the participants that their intentions are truthful, even if implementation is mediocre. Yeah, they really got good intentions, but they're not very good at this. Their implementation is mediocre, which is why, and this gets back to efficiency that we talked about as a reasonable act for our leaders to have. That's why you keep track of them, right? And you don't get an ugly surprise. Sometimes, I actually, frequently, in different ways, I tell people their task more than once in kind of different ways, and I do ask them to repeat it, to say what it is they're going to do right off, because I don't want them to misunderstand the instructions and implement mediocre, as Barbara and others are saying. Yeah, I don't want them to get to the, well, I've put a lot of time and effort into this, but yeah, it was sideways. Ah, gee, right? Yeah, we want you to really be effective, really do something that we can use, right? Yeah, and not be kind of, oh, gee, I didn't understand the question. Which is why you as leader must be accessible. And team leaders must be accessible. And everybody needs to kind of watch and see that everybody's doing something useful, what we expect them to do, right? Yeah. And that's not even so much good faith, it's implementation. And they didn't understand it, so they're implementing in some way that is not a good idea, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we do have a reasonable expectation about not being a spy. Mm-hmm. Yes. Let's go to the next one, which under reasonable expectation of our participants is to complete the task, right? Yeah, we just touched on that. You need to have people really, first of all, they have to understand the task. Yeah. So I actually, not necessarily real directly, sometimes directly, people, what it is they're going to do. Yeah. Because if they don't know or they say something that's not quite what we had in mind, good to know it first off. Good to understand that you didn't understand. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Didn't quite understand the instruction. Even though I, as leader, think I was crystal clear. Which is why I like to repeat things more than once in different ways. Because people hear and learn differently and understand through different methods, through different words, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we actually have a reasonable expectation of our participants that they will complete their tasks. Well, is the other part of that. Yeah. And really understand how to do it, what needs to be done, and that we're going to do it now. We're going to do it well. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about setting a deadline and using a timeline. Not a bad idea, depending on if it's that kind of issues and there are completed tasks that need to be done by a certain time period. I don't like to set artificial deadlines and timelines, because I find that they get breached, right? And then it wasn't a real timeline, so we let it go and make another one. But it's a bad habit. And then people know that the deadline's not really real. They're just kind of being asked to do it, but they understand that it's not quite it, right? Yeah. So I like a timeline and deadline set that means something. Sometimes you've got some serious deadlines. The corporate corporate created, or something needs to be filed by a certain time to get on a ballot. Very important to keep a timeline so that no one loses track and kind of ruins, doesn't make a deadline, doesn't blow something that they needed to file, and it didn't get filed, and we're not on the ballot. Well, that's no good, right? We need somebody to track that. That's serious. That's a serious timeline. Some of these things are kind of artificial, and the participants know it. They're not fooled. So that's a more complicated issue, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people are talking about reporting during the process. Very important. Very important for somebody to be keeping track. How do we know if we're doing a good job? How do we know if we're on this right track? Well, we're going to do it by frequently sending in a report of how we're doing. Mm-hmm. The next one is working as a team. You want to work as a team, you have to ask questions, right? The leader has to be calm about that because you see the same questions a lot. This is true. But these people haven't asked the question before. It's new to them. And you don't want to get burnout and have it not be new to you anymore and go, Jesus Christ, that's so obvious. Well, no, not really, because they've never done it before. You think it's obvious because you've seen it a lot. Hey, that's not fair. This is their first time. So we need to work as a team and ask questions. How are we going to know stuff if we don't ask? Mm-hmm. Yes, we talked about an intern and an assistant, but the team leader also keeps track. The team leader helps with the process, right? Yeah, so that it doesn't kind of go awry. And then when there's a report 6 weeks later, it's like, Jesus Christ, we weren't all on the same page. Going to be all on the same page. Yes, teams will regularly report to the whole. It's a good way of putting it. Yeah, thank you, Lou. Teams regularly report to the whole. People are talking about a timeline, that the participant should create a timeline, as a team, of course, with us as the leader. Very important if there are actual dates when you have to do something by. Yeah? Because a timeline is useful. You have to file something. You have to get something on it, whatever it is. Not so useful if everybody knows that it can be easily modified because it keeps getting pushed back. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe it's a good visual if people like it. I think it gets that you make a timeline and it's just an idea, it's not going to be obeyed. And a timeline that's got definite drop-dead-by dates is different. That's very serious, right? Mm-hmm. We also need empathy for each other as participants. How are we going to get along? And remember that empathy is not agreement, it is understanding. We're all going to break out the 5W questions again, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe we're also going to use food as a tool. I am getting to the recipes this time. We haven't done the recipes in like weeks because we have such fabulous conversations. But I know you like them, all, a lot of you. And so we're going to make it. I've left some time. One of the ways to get empathy for each other is to use the food as a tool to network, to find out something about your fellow participant that you didn't know and you've probably got in common. You'd be surprised. People who seem like they have absolutely nothing in common have the weirdest things in common. I had people that actually have grandchildren in the same school. Well, wow, that's something, right? And it really makes you feel warmly towards the other person because they're more like you than you thought. That's human nature. So we might be hungry, but we're also going to use the food as a tool, right? The food is a tool to get us to talk about something that we're not going to be mad about, that we're going to be able to be understanding, right? Yeah, the food is a tool to reach empathy. Understanding, not necessarily agreement, right? Mm-hmm. And if we're going to have food, and we are, we're going to take a survey. We're going to take a survey and ask if anybody has food they don't eat, an allergy, a religious prohibition, whatever it is, so that we know, so that everyone can have a good time. And if we're going to have our survey, which we are, we're also going to make a list when we bring something of what is in it. Not what's it called, but what is in it. We need the list because I need to run, as a participant or leader, I need to run my eye down the list and see if it's something I can eat. Because now I know what's in there, right? So let's see if it's something that I can eat and I can go forward with it. Yum. I think we should have a safe recipe, which is something that for sure everybody can eat. And it is something that my participants would be familiar with. Mm-hmm. My participants, for example, would not be familiar with a curry. And maybe yours would be extremely familiar with a curry. Eat it every day, right? Yeah, so it depends. It's somewhat regional what's a safe recipe and what isn't. This first one we're going to do, I don't know if we're going to make two of them. The first one we're going to do is the sausage and pork stew. It is the adventure recipe because, of course, it's got pork. And pork is something that quite a few people do not eat. But we've taken our survey, right? And it looks like our people are okay with it. Mm-hmm. This is actually a slow cooker recipe. Around here we call it a crock pot. I don't know if that's a brand name or not, but it's one of those slow cookers, right? I love slow cookers. You stick stuff in it in the morning, raw stuff, right? And by evening, it's food. It's fabulous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, we're going to use the slow cooker, a crock pot. We're going to have 2 cups of dried beans, if you want to use dried beans, right? You need to rinse them, usually, and stick the beans in 6 cups of water, bring it to a boil, reduce the heat, simmer, remove from the heat, let stand for an hour, drain and rinse, transfer beans to the slow cooker because they don't have to really be cooked through because they're going to cook through. If you want to go that route, do that. I'm personally going to use a couple cans of Italian beans that I'm going to drain and put them in at the end, at the last minute, because they're already soft, right? Because they're already cooked. They're already canned beans. So if you're going to use raw beans, 2 cups of dried beans, like those Italian beans, the white ones that are nice and big, if you're going to use raw ones, you have to put them in, you have to soak them and then put them in originally, right? If not, you put them in at the very end. Let's also have, pound and a half, maybe 2 pounds, of Italian sausage. If it's got that kind of plasticky casing, get rid of it. It's not to eat, right? 2 pounds of lean boneless pork that we're going to cut into half-inch pieces, right? Chunks. Mm-hmm. Let's have a nice, large, sweet onion that we're going to chop. 4 carrots. Cut them into half-inch discs. Yeah, a little bit less maybe, because they're going to get nice and soft. Mm-hmm. 3 cloves of garlic, chopped up. I would probably use more, but you guys say I use a lot of garlic. Mm-hmm. A couple cups of water. As it goes along, you can add a little bit more. I personally, instead of the water, I use broth. I use beef broth. I think it gives a little more taste. It is a little salty, though. Mm-hmm. Let's have, if you're not going to use the broth and you're going to use water, you might need a bouillon croup. So think about that. But I use broth to get rid of that problem. Let's have a half cup of red wine. It gives a little taste, right? Let's have a half cup. Well, it's about a third of a cup. It's a 6-ounce can of tomato paste. Just throw the whole thing in there. A little bit of Italian seasoning, like oregano and thyme, teaspoon of it. Usually it comes mixed around here, but it's basically oregano and thyme. Yeah. So we're going to take our large skillet. We've done the beans thing if we're using raw, right? In a big, nice big skillet, we're going to cook the sausage, and we're going to break it into pieces, right? You know, we don't put that in raw. Mm-hmm. We've got our nice pieces of sausage all cooked up. Let's take a nice slotted spoon and stick it in the slow cooker. Mm-hmm. We've now got the grease from the sausage goodies, right? Let's take our pork, our raw pork. Let's put it right in the same hot pot with the grease and the fixins and stuff. Brown it off all the way around into the slow cooker, right? We might need to transfer off some of the fat from now because you've got kind of a pool of it. You have to decide. But we're going to add the onions and the carrots and the garlic, right? And we're going to stick those in the slow cooker. I add a little bit of fat from my skillet. I just think it tastes good. You can decide if you want to do that or not. So let's add the onions and the garlic and the carrots. Let's stir in a couple of cups of water or the broth. I like the broth. And the Italian seasonings, right? And the wine, right? Because that's other liquid. Mm-hmm. And the tomato paste. Mm-hmm. You can do the tomato paste at the end, too, depending on how you feel about it. I like to throw it in now. I mix it in with the wine to make it sauce, so to speak, makes it liquid. Mm-hmm. It's all in the slow cooker now. Yay, team. Now you look in it and you see if you've got enough liquid. If you think not, add a little bit more of the broth. Mm-hmm. I hate to say 3 cups because it's kind of a lot of liquid. And if you put in a lot of liquid, that's all right. You just kind of leave some in the slow cooker so that your stew is not watery. Mm-hmm. Low setting, 7 to 8 hours. High setting, about 4 hours. Ooh, there it is. It's all cooked. At the very end, right, if you're using the cans of beans, throw them in, drained and rinsed, of course, mm-hmm, into the slow cooker about 15 minutes before you're done. Because they're not cold, they're basically cooked, and you don't want them to fall apart because they're softish, right? And you, also, when you rinse them under cold water to get rid of the, for lack of a better word, the kind of slime they come in, right? You want to get rid of any loose shells. They're not really shells, but it's the membrane that's on the outside, right? Are they edible? Yeah. Are they ugly? Yeah. You want to get them out of your food so that it's not all covered with, well, stuff that don't look very nice, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So, that's our sausage and pork stew. Fabulous. It's delicious. Yes, I serve it with some sort of a starch that we put on the side. Rice. One of the few things I have that only does one thing is a rice cooker because we use a lot of rice. And you can just bring it like that, just like you can bring the inside of your slow cooker all put together, right? All ready. If you're meeting in a room that has facilities, you can put it together in the morning at the facility. Leave it there. It'll make the whole place smell fabulous. Rice, yes, George always votes for mashed potatoes, which is a very good vote. Polenta, some sort of a thing to go under it because it's stew, right? You got a lot of people, make a double portion in a bigger slow cooker. Yep. This is kind of a smallish amount. Hey, make tons. Everybody loves it. And, of course, you adjust. Well, the heat, surprisingly enough, is about the same because you've already cooked the sausage and you've browned the pork and everything. So you really, it's about the same amount of time for a bigger amount, but you need a little more liquid, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Delicious. Everybody likes it. They can just put the spoon in both pots and dish it out themselves, right? Yummy. That is our adventure recipe. My friends, we are out of time. Yes. We will get to the safe recipe, which is a lovely traditional chicken salad, next time. Thank you all for coming. Thank you for all of your participation and for listening. If you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, recipeforpeacenow.com. You really don't need the W's, do you? Depends on how your internet connection is doing. Internationally, you kind of do. recipeforpeacenow.com. Yes. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.